how the deep state came into American consciousness underlines the flawed research and fancifulness that hampers any discussion of hidden societies and shadow governments. Turkey, the state of the deep-er? It's difficult to speak about modern Turkey's growth without remembering its past of governmental conspiracies. Conspiratorial parties and activities are at the center of many significant events that have shaped the modern history of the country. For example, it is abundantly clear that the Republic of Turkey was founded during the later years of the Ottoman Empire by individuals who had helped create a true state within a state. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of the Republic, was numbered among the pioneering members of the Union and Progress Committee, CUP. This political party governed the empire during its final decade. While the CUP preserved the illusion of being a democratic party, dedicated to parliamentary government and the rule of law, its members maintained a hidden system of parallel control of the country. The CUP relied on its covert weapons to retain control and remove perceived threats to the state as the empire reached the final throes of its collapse. Among the chief actions connected with this secret power system was the Armenian genocide, partially conducted with the assistance of paramilitaries and related civilian loyalists. While Atatürk may have remained aloof from the anti-Armenian policies of the government, covert CUP operatives proved instrumental in promoting his rise in 1923, leading to the establishment of the Republic. For some scholars, the CUP period led to the establishment within the ranks of the Turkish state of a culture of deception and subversion. The repeated military coups that racked Turkey during the 20th century are often described as a legacy of the CUP's dependence on cabals within the Ottoman army to retain its control of the empire. Of all the events that have come to epitomize the position of hidden factions in Turkish history, the so-called 1996 Susurluk incident stands as the clearest and most vivid case pointing to clandestine actors' enduring influence. The event, which revealed the government's recruitment of gangsters as hitmen to prosecute its dirty war against the Kurdish Workers' Party, PKK, seemed to suggest a wider trend of misconduct and abuse among members of the political establishment in Turkey. Susurluk seemed to indicate that the elected government was merely a shell that masked the identity of the true rulers of the country. The list included military leaders, the intelligence service, the mafia, and the business elite. It was widely assumed that the aim of this alliance was simple: to destroy or discredit anyone who they believed threatened the legitimacy of the Turkish state and country. The covert extra-legal existence of this supposed system was necessary for the deep state of Turkey that most people came to believe. The incident at Susurluk helped popularize the notion of the deep state, but it did not spawn its definition. It is not fully clear to this day who invented the term or when it was first used. While some have argued that leftist commentators first used it before 1996, one journalist claimed that the first phrase originated from the government minister's lips that helped hire the assassins from Susurluk. Regardless of its specific point of origin, by the beginning of the new century, The term had become an integral part of the Turkish vocabulary. However, there was little consensus as to exactly who or what constituted the deep Turkish state. Widespread concern over the presence of a parallel structure of governmental authority was among the most significant factors leading to the 2002 election of the Justice and Development Party, AKP, of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. As Prime Minister, Erdogan promised to enter the government with clean hands and vowed to root out the deep state that he said had existed since the Ottomans' last days. It appeared in 2008 that he had started delivering on that pledge. Over the next few years, prosecutors charged that a single secret group called Ergenekon itself was behind a series of conspiracies to overthrow and influence the Turkish state. The origins of this cartel, which allegedly consisted of senior military officers, officials, politicians, gangsters, and journalists, were described as decades old, reminiscent of events even before the Susurluk scandal. Convictions in the Ergenekon trial were widely heralded as a sign that the deep state finally met its match, a statement which was supported by Erdogan himself. But even at the time, critics raised questions about the legitimacy of the case of the government, casting it as an effort to undermine opponents of the AKP administration. Ahmet Sik, a prominent investigative journalist, was among the first to say that the Ergenekon investigation was an undertaken by police and state lawyers loyal to a religious movement undertaken by Fethullah Gulen, a U.S.-based cleric then affiliated with the government of Erdogan. The ultimate split between Erdogan and Gulen, which may have sparked the July 2016 attempted coup, has done a lot to confuse what the deep Turkish state has ever meant. According to state prosecutors and many pro-Erdogan commentators, today, Gulen and his adherents dominated Turkey's deep state for a long time. An accusation, partisans claim, substantiated by the coup in 2016, as well as the role Gulenists played in prosecuting the Ergenekon trials. Ahmet Sik, who is now a member of parliament, responded that the AKP had eventually bested Gulen in a fight for deep state power, leading to the formation of Erdogan himself as a mafia sultanate. The current controversy about the deep state of Turkey represents long simmering conflicts over how the term is interpreted. Scholars or commentators have been grappling with the true meaning of the deep state since 1996, as well as the specifics that shaped its creation throughout the history of the Republic. For example, there is a strong consensus that the deep Turkish state was heavily influenced by the formation of a NATO-led secret unit named Operation Gladio. As a covert force inside the ranks of the Turkish army, in the event of a war with the Soviet Union, Gladio was suspected of being an independently run, stay-behind force, intended to battle accused communists and other alleged subversives. How instrumental that unit was in shaping the deep state of Turkey, let alone how it evolved, has long been somewhat enigmatic to researchers. To exacerbate the debate about its importance is the virtual absence of verifiable government reports referring to the presence or activities of the party. Instead of hard facts, the majority of the specifics have been provided by press interviews with supposed witnesses and members of this counter-guerrilla unit. Testimony from hearsay and unreliable sources also covered up state-run inquiries into the cases of Sisurluk. It is now painfully clear that prosecutors fabricated evidence in the Ergenekon trial and relied heavily on the testimony of confidential or unreliable witnesses. Official government agencies in Turkey have given no support in trying to answer questions about the deep history of the country's administration. Concerning state documents, no formal declassification scheme exists in Turkey, except for the archives managed by the Prime Minister's office. None of the country's principal ministries provides easy access to their records by the public. Turkey's internal debates regarding its suspected deep state at first prompted only a small group of researchers to look for deep states elsewhere. Academics used the definition as a jump-off point for researching a select number of events, such as the implementation of military rule in Cold War Greece and the continuing impact of the army and bureaucracy of the Thai government. The protests, which erupted on Tahrir Square in Cairo in 2011, followed by the overthrow of Mohamed Morsi's Muslim Brotherhood government, inspired many comparisons between the deep state of Egypt and that of Turkey. The discovery of Osama bin Laden in May 2011 prompted others to refer the deep state nickname to Pakistan's intelligence agency, the ISI, because of the power that it exerts in Karachi. The first academic step to internationalize the deep state concept came in an essay by the Norwegian scholar Ola Tunander, published in 2009. In reading a series of terrorist attacks committed by members of the Italian clandestine service during the height of the Cold War, Tunander argued that the deep state, regardless of where it may be found, is in reality a feature of what Hans Morgenthau had previously called the current dual state. As an institution independent from the open, officially recognized democratic state, the deep stable, when elected governments challenge the internal or foreign interests of the deep state, actors associated with that alliance, which Tunander associates with the military, the intelligence service, the mafia, the far-right political activists, use every means to change the political direction of the state. Before a conference was held in Melbourne in 2006, Tunander introduced this view of the deep state. The case, dedicated to the study of parapolitics and shadow governance, featured many well-respected organized crime academics, as well as numerous regional fields. Except for Tunander, none of those who took part used the word deep state within their presentations. Some scholars preferred similar conceptual concepts, for example, parapolitics, a more general word used to characterize the hierarchical relationships between state actors and criminal organizations. The scholar who was perhaps best known for popularizing the idea of parapolitics, Peter Dale Scott, was attending the conference. He had never heard of the deep state until that point, Scott later explained, but was taken up elsewhere by Tunander's study of Italy and its applicability. "I was really happy," he told me in 2007, "to know how closely, very closely, my study of America suits Ola Tunander's thinking of America, as well as other nations." There are, however, sporadic signs of the swamp lurking just under the gleaming surfaces. Because Washington is situated just below a waterfall, This bit of the Potomac will always be a busy meeting place for sea creatures, where saltwater fish often swim in. Very far from the Chesapeake Bay, to mingle with their cousins of freshwater. Sharks were sighted within the district's waters, as reported by a 1918 Natural History. An 8-foot bull shark was captured downriver in September 2015 in St. Mary's County. There are occasions when the waters demand more immediate attention. In 2006, the long-forgotten Tiber Creek reaffirmed itself by rising from its underground pit, where it still runs under Constitution Avenue, and challenging the United States' actual Constitution. The paper, along with the Declaration of Independence, is stored in a safe vault in the National Archives. The underground waters grew rapidly after a heavy rainstorm, halting, thankfully, just short of the archives, but reaching alarming heights, walking through the basement of the archive and a theater where tourists could find an unexpected reflective pool the next day, lapping at their feet. A new president will be sworn in on January 20th, and the system is built to facilitate the power transition is now complete. The temporary platform recently constructed underneath the Capitol's west front is painted white to fit the building behind it. It includes small touches that represent the classical grandeur sought by the founders. It will carry the weight of hundreds of people during the ceremony, including incoming and outgoing presidents, their families, and their confidants. It will also bear the weight of the world's focus as the TV cameras beam their broadcasts from around the world from this location. In the exact place where Thomas Jefferson wrote the word Capitol on his 1791 sketch of the future Capitol, the United States leaders will again meet to discuss the questions he posed in his inaugural, the first to be held there in 1801. After a tumultuous campaign, the address vowed to unite all Americans with one heart and one mind and banish a political divide that was already dividing the country at that early date. Looking out of the crowds, Jefferson called for their help in moving the state ship through waters already roiled. He did not use the term state ship. Instead, he named it the vessel on which we are all embarked amid the competing elements of a troubled nation. Nevertheless, it was a nautical metaphor. Noah's Ark springs to mind, and the roiled waters were real, not only in the sense that many Americans had difficulty accepting the results of his victory, but because Jefferson's Tiber was a-gurgling. Although these waters may not be self-evident, they still flow, concealed from sight. At noon on the 20th, from this forum, a global audience of billions will see a familiar democratic process performed, and a new time is starting. But the waters of the Tiber will continue to murmur, a subterranean reminder of a swamp that has defied centuries of human efforts to kill it, well below the Capitol, underneath even the tunnels that take busy senators and representatives from one underground chamber to another. Knowledge and democracy, a negative link. The protagonist is Elliot Carver in the 1997 James Bond film Tomorrow Never Dies, the leader of a media empire that has come to believe that intelligence is a tool more powerful than military force. He blackmails senior British leaders and eventually attempts to spark a war in Beijing between China and Britain to get his ally into power. His story is a mixture of real-world actions, luring and sinking a British frigate into Chinese waters, with a global media blitz to demonstrate to the world that the action represents Chinese aggression and fuel British nationalism's flames. At one point in the film, Carver stands in the headquarters of his media empire under huge television screens, writing personal headlines, many of them relating to fake events that will drive the world into war. "We are both acting guys," he says to Bond, "but your age is going by. Words are the latest arms, the latest artillery satellites. Caesar had troops, Napoleon had armies. I have my divisions. TV, internet, magazines." Carver indicates that global media influence would give him more power than any of those military leaders ever could exert. The Bond plot provides one view of a dystopian future, the idea that mass media has become so strong, dominant, and deceptive in the modern age that with some actual events thrown in for leavening, they can make entire societies believe the opposite of the reality. Elliot Carver is a turbocharged version of the ancient media personalities who trafficked in rumor, innuendo, and even outright manufacturing. Empowered by new technology and fueled by a desire to deepen established social tensions and fuel public belief in their authorities and institutions, he takes the trend to its logical conclusion, replacing fact with fabricated fiction. The social exploitation danger. Fast forward 20 years and the scenario seems to become a reality. Using today's far more advanced than those accessible to Bond villains in the 1990s. Today's practitioners of what this study refers to as aggressive social manipulation employ targeted social media campaigns, sophisticated falsifications, cyberbullying, and intimidation of individuals, dissemination of misinformation and conspiracy theories, and other tools and approaches to damage the target state. This evolving activity represents an updated and changed version of several modes of control that have long been developed, including propaganda, active measures, disinformation, and political warfare. The opponents do not attempt to physically assault their rivals, but merely to destabilize them, concludes one article on the trend. They support attacks on people's views in their government and about the capacity of a population to differentiate reality from fiction. Sometimes these strategic resources are part of broader campaigns under different names. Political warfare, short-term steps of battle, gray zone campaigns. Such campaigns can include many instruments outside the realm of information manipulation. They may include economic assistance or sanctions, overt political intervention by helping particular parties or groups, covert operations to promote demonstrations or even coups, and more. However, in this study, we concentrate on one aspect of these broader campaigns, the use of knowledge in other cultures to influence beliefs and behaviors and to achieve negative results. In the wake of allegations of Russian election interference, the subject has become a leading topic of discussion in the West, not just in the United States, but throughout Europe. As British Prime Minister Theresa May recently said of the leading practitioner of such techniques, Russia is seeking to arm information in an attempt to sow discord in the West and undermine our institutions, threatening the international order on which we all rely. Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden and political analyst Michael Carpenter recently argued that the effort to weaken and weaken. Studies have laid bare many big efforts to use knowledge for offensive purposes by several actors in the last year. Russia used a wide variety of tools to sow discord, deepen political tensions, undermine trust in democratic institutions in general, and the political process in particular, cause real-world political demonstrations, and exploit political and social outcomes in the United States. These strategies ranged from automated bots spewing thousands of tweets to Facebook political ads, to overt propaganda broadcasting through state-owned media outlets, to the coordinated release of stolen documents to manipulate election results. In the meantime, Russia employs a confounding variety of state-led, state-sponsored actors to produce its performance. The Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIS militant group, has continued to employ a sophisticated multi-level social media outreach network to disseminate its message, educate and inspire future extremists, and attract actual followers. Multiple studies show that Russia and Venezuelan social media pages flooded Spain with pro-independence messages during the separatist Catalan crisis of 2017. A study of more than 5 million messages linked to the separatist debate stated that 97% of them originated from Russian and Venezuelan accounts. "Europe is at war," concluded one account of the awareness campaign. "Virtual war, faced with an attack with sowed mistrust, increased divisions, and undermined existing democratic processes." China is reportedly becoming increasingly active in this area, including directly or indirectly funding websites and social media platforms, promoting official Chinese narratives, and increasingly spreading disinformation and outright fabrications intended to exacerbate social tensions in the United States. Journalist Josh Rogan cautioned in the Washington Post that the massive reach and size of the Chinese Communist Party controls operations within the United States that permeate all kinds of American institutions. At the very least, China's overarching aim is to protect its authoritarian structure from attacks and, at most, export it to the world at the expense of America. He described Beijing's combination of technology, intimidation, repression, exclusion, and economic incentives as beyond anything that this country has ever faced. Ways of intelligence manipulation have now expanded far past misinformation and election targeting. Russia and others have pursued cyber abuse, trolling, stealing, and then revealing personal information, as well as other tactics to threaten or undermine particular individuals or political organizations, both in Eastern Europe and in the West. More generally, Freedom House's Michael Abramowitz claimed at the end of 2017 that online deception tactics have played a major role in at least 17 other elections in the past year. Governing parties from the Philippines and Ecuador to Turkey and Kenya used paid pundits, trolls, bots, fake news pages, and propaganda outlets to inflate their common popularity and effectively endorse themselves. Chapter 8. The Boom in the Coronavirus Conspiracy. For conspiracy theorists, COVID-19 produced a perfect storm. Here we have a global pandemic, a collapsing economy, social alienation, and restrictive policies of government. All of these can trigger feelings of intense fear, powerlessness, and tension, which in turn promote conspiracy theory. an urban legend that the pandemic was predicted in a Dean Koontz thriller in the early 1980s, circulated on social media for more than a month. Meanwhile, believers in QAnon are spreading the theory of mole kids, which holds that the virus is a plot to apprehend members of the satanic deep state, Tom Hanks, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and free their hostages, sex slave girls, from underground Central Park. Tom Hanks' appearance on Saturday Night Live was supposed to have claimed that he was investigated for child molestation, but in traditional conspiracy fashion, believers merely explained the irregularity away, arguing that Hanks' monologue was a deep-rooted one. But if the coronavirus pandemic is a fertile ground for paranoia, it is also an opportunity, a rare chance, for social scientists to investigate how many Americans, provided the right set of conditions, would accept conspiracy theories. Although laboratory experiments and public opinion polls are useful in understanding the basic structure of conspiracy ideas, they cannot replicate real-world disasters of the sort that cater to certain people to conspiracy theories. It is prudent to step back and use these unusual situations to consider what theories of conspiracy may teach us about the media, the government, and us. It turns out they have a lot to tell us. Mainstream conspiracy theories about coronavirus come in two varieties. Those that dispute the seriousness of the virus, and those who say it could be a bioweapon. The former was supported by President Trump, who early in the pandemic referred to the virus as the latest hoax of the Democrats. While he has taken the virus more seriously since mid-March, he has yet to expressly denounce the notion of exaggerating the virus's threat, or encouraging like-minded leftists to take it seriously in government and media. Indeed, even as the death toll increases, conservative media figures continue to cast doubt on the truth of the pandemic. For instance, radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh indicated that our officials in public health are deep state spies and may not even be health experts. The argument has been advanced by some conservative activists that our hospitals do not genuinely treat any COVID-19 patients, going so far as to urge people to stake out local hospitals and record the number of patients going in and out. The second form of the conspiracy theory of coronavirus argues that the virus was intentionally disseminated in a laboratory by foreign forces, such as China or Russia, or by billionaire philanthropists such as George Soros and Bill Gates. Maybe China developed or operated with this strain of coronavirus, and maybe Gates and the World Health Organization are worried about the virus escaped by mistake. An especially destructive version of this conspiracy theory ties the virus with 5G technology. In recent weeks, it has motivated believers to destroy cell phone towers across Europe. To see how much attention these two core versions of coronavirus conspiracy theories got in the earlier stages of the pandemic, we polled a representative sample of 2,023 Americans from March 17th to March 19th on their beliefs in these and several other conspiracy theories. We also questioned survey respondents about their political affiliation and ideological leanings, along with questions designed to capture different worldviews. The poll: Since the pandemic continues to grow and the responses from federal and state governments, we must remember that our findings are just a single snapshot of what we anticipate to be a long timeline. That said, at the outset of the pandemic, when our survey was conducted, conspiracy beliefs about COVID-19 were possibly more prevalent, and when social distancing, hand-washing, and other preventive measures were taking place. The kinds of behaviors denied by conspiracy beliefs had the greatest potential to reduce the spread of the virus. For this reason, our findings are instructive in recognizing the full effect of the prosecutions of coronavirus fraud. Nearly everyone told us they believed in one of the 22 conspiracy theories we were talking about. Only 9% of respondents did not agree with any of the 22. 54% believe that the 1% of the richest Americans secretly run the government. 50% believe that Jeffrey Epstein, a billionaire, was assassinated to mask his activities. 45% believe that the risks of genetically modified foods are concealed from the public. And 43% believe that an extrajudicial deep state is secretly embedded within our government. Political conspiracy theories, those who specifically accuse one party member of conspiring, often have strong support. 37% of Americans believe President Trump has been colluding with Russia to win the 2016 election and that Trump is a Russian weapon. 28% claimed that Hillary Clinton sold nuclear weapons to Russia, and 20% still claimed that Barack Obama fabricated his citizenship to usurp the presidency illegally. Meanwhile, 29% believe the virus epidemic has been exaggerated to hurt the chances of President Trump's re-election, and 31% believe the virus has been created and propagated intentionally. In other words, belief in the theories of coronavirus conspiracy is around in the middle, around 20 percentage points lower than beliefs in the Epstein and the theories of 1%, but about twice as high as beliefs in theories that school shootings are incidents of false flags, and that the number of Jews killed in the Holocaust has been inflated. Other health conspiracy theories show similar levels of support among the general public. 30% believe vaccine risks have been silenced, and 26% believe about 5G technology as much. These are alarming figures, but considering what we know about other conspiracy theories, our positive view is that the figures may be much higher. Of course, to monitor the life cycle of these hypotheses as the pandemic progresses, further polling is needed. But considering America's unparalleled levels of tension, confusion, and impotence feelings, the statistics are likely to suggest a natural limit of conspiracy theories that will be impossible to crack without more prominent figures peddling them. Where do these convictions come from? A common belief is that the Internet, and in particular social media, is responsible for the apparent proliferation of conspiracy theories within American political culture. But while these networks make it simpler and more effective to spread every concept, the Internet is merely a medium for spreading a human concoction. Social scientists, for the most part, have yet to find proof that conspiracy theories have arisen in the era of the Internet. In reality, some conspiracy theories, such as those surrounding the assassination of President Kennedy, have lost support as Internet access and usage spread. Conspiracy theories also have origins in the basic elements of human psychology and interaction. The first of those elements is attachments to groups. Simply put, people are inclined to assume that their party is good and right, and that bad, evil, or otherwise wrong are other competing groups. People tend to see politics, for example, through their own political or moral lens. Their group, their members, and their goals are right, and the other side is inept or corrupt. This dynamic explains why some Republicans assume that Obama faked his birth certificate, or that Clinton secretly handed uranium to the Russians, just as it accounts for the convictions of some Democrats that Trump is a Russian asset. These community attachments do not work only from the bottom up. They can be triggered by cues from the leaders of their party speeches, commercials, tweets. If the conspiracy theories are shared by elected officials or media figures affiliated with a political party, their adherents are more likely to take the knowledge to heart and accept certain views. Take the hypothesis that the coronavirus has exaggerated symptoms to harm Trump. For two reasons, this argument finds considerably more support among Republicans than Democrats. Republicans have more to lose in a presidential election year, and Trump and other leaders have deliberately peddled the notion that COVID-19 was inflated to benefit him. The second major causal factor behind the conspiracy theories is conspiracy theory, a mentality that predisposes people to perceive events and facts as the result of dark conspiracies. When activated by knowledge implying a conspiracy, or by the rhetoric of political insiders, or by the fear brought on by an uncontrollable disaster, this latent predisposition renders conspiracies an appealing explanation for unexpected circumstances. We tested conspiracy thinking in our poll by asking respondents to react to statements like, "The people who really run the country are not known to the electorate." We found that respondents who agree with feelings like this appear to believe more conspiracy theories deeper. Indeed, our measure of conspiracy thinking highly predicts belief in any of the 22 particular conspiracy theories for which we asked the respondents. It's disturbing on the one hand that certain people follow the conspiracy theories so easily. On the other hand, many people don't, and these people serve as a shield to spread myths of conspiracy, losing much of the natural ceiling. Conspiracy theory is the most predictive of beliefs, in particular conspiracy theories, when party figures are not staking out positions, and the least predictive when they do. For example, Russian leaders have long challenged the validity of climate change, so much so that they call it a hoax. In this situation, in justifying skepticism of climate change, Republicanism is almost as predictive as a conspiracy theory. But this is not the case for conspiracy theories not dragged into the political arena, such as those about AIDS, vaccines, and genetically modified foods. If theories like these became fodder for common political and ideological leaders, beliefs in them might grow very fast. The nature of COVID-19 conspiracy theories, how common they are, where they come from, and what they mean, is entirely predictable within this system. In the case of coronavirus, the main difference is the stakes. For example, we have little reason to be worried about the 1 in 3 Americans who believe aliens have made secret contact with humans, and our country was not in danger at any point, because almost 80% of Americans once felt that the Warren Commission was incorrect with the specifics of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. But the implications of blaming the appearance of the coronavirus on the wrong cause, or of doubting its severity, may be significantly life-threatening, according to some people. People who assume the virus is a bioweapon may have a greater risk of engaging in hoarding and other self-centered behaviors. And if the one in three Americans who thinks COVID-19's effects have been exaggerated chose to forego critical health habits, such as social distancing, using hand sanitizer, and wearing a mask, then the disease could spread faster and farther than otherwise and cost several thousand lives. Chapter 9, Technology and COVID-19. These new technologies and strategies pose a potentially significant threat to the interests of the U.S. and its allies. Yet democracies also fail to interpret knowledge as a potential tool. Many democratic systems have the inherent presumption that free flow of knowledge is an unalloyed social good. This presumption is not fully undermined by the reality of aggressive actors in the infosphere. Still, it does mean that the United States and other democratic countries need to start thinking more strategically about the knowledge environment, its weaknesses, and also potential benefits. A polluted atmosphere. Although there is no definitive proof yet about the implications of what has taken place thus far, these technologies and strategies are symptomatic of genuinely profound changes to open society's character of the infosphere. The United States urgently needs to work to ensure that foreign powers cannot easily manipulate elections or cause major social tensions. But this research points to a much larger task. Understanding whether current developments in the infosphere risk are creating conditions that can have serious long-term effects on those societies' cohesion and stability. This danger may be called infosphere corruption. Usually, the target of aggressors using psychological manipulation tactics won't be to alter fundamental beliefs or vast populations' brainwash. Everything we know about perceptions, shifting behaviors, and persuasion indicates that unless a manipulator can exert near total control of a knowledge space, such fine-tuning of beliefs across entire populations is extremely hard. Social manipulators would often attempt to create disruption and conduct a systemic bullying campaign, often involving indirect or even direct physical aggression toward perceived opponents. These developments in the process will drastically shift our understanding of the influence of authoritarian regimes on world politics. Such states will continue to pursue an iron grip on their own communities' knowledge flows, values, and attitudes, a challenge now driven by the large quantities of data accessible from state-controlled social media networks and surveillance technologies and techniques of the 21st century. But they will also gradually attempt to achieve global scope for some of the components of this autocratic program. Not regulating information flows per se, but undermining the world's free confidence in common facts and reality. Working hard to deepen social tensions within democracies, and most of all, resuming an ongoing campaign of abuse, bullying, and virtual and physical violence. They would try to provoke the same uncertainty, apprehension, and self-censorship among opponents globally as they do within their borders amongst their people. Moreover, as multiple states conduct such campaigns, the incremental emergence of a new global alliance, informal but significant, of autocratic states working to subvert the free sphere of knowledge and destabilize democratic societies may be a related risk. Evidence of Russian and Venezuelan collaboration in intervening in the Catalan independence debate in Spain has already emerged. Some social media websites in China reposted Russian propaganda. Over time, countries like Russia, China, Venezuela, Iran, North Korea, and others have been able to find ways to work together to create new information structures, encourage counter-narratives, and achieve unique disruptive impacts. One related outcome may be the deep division of global knowledge networks into overlapping, mutually exclusive regions, including the Internet itself, with profound effects on world politics and international relations. This process is already well underway, with the efforts of several countries, especially China, to create what amounts to parallel internets. The full implications of those possibilities are too early to grasp. Liberal democracies have regarding the exchange of information and expertise as a competitive advantage. Some people say that there is no coronavirus and there is no risk, but that all of it is orchestrated by some global powers that are involved in pressuring people to reserve and then irradiate them from 5G antennas to lose consciousness, and then implant them with microchips, TASS quoted Bitterov as saying. There are plenty of people who think so. The leader of North Ossetia, Vyacheslav Bitterov, addresses people opposing the April 20th lockdown of coronavirus. Such baseless claims build on and deepen existing public mistrust of health and safety matters. And during the current global health crisis, they are especially insidious, as they threaten to drown out important science-based knowledge about the deadly COVID-19 pandemic and how to effectively combat coronavirus spread. Any correlation between 5G technology and COVID-19 is total nonsense, Simon Clark, a University of Reading associate professor of cellular microbiology, told the BBC. Stephen Powis, the UK's National Health Services Medical Officer, said the allegations of a connection are the worst kind of false news. The origin story. The cellular network infrastructure of fifth generation 5G started to be deployed internationally in 2019. It promises greater bandwidth with data transfer much quicker, up to 10 gigabits per second, or around 100 times quicker than current 4G technology. However, this is done by using a radio frequency higher than that of 4G networks. Some of the used frequency fly just around 1.6 kilometers and have difficulty reaching certain building materials. Consequently, a 5G network needs a much denser antenna deployment. As of April 2019, operators had started implementing a 5G technology in 88 countries. Nevertheless, anti-5G groups started emerging on social media almost instantly. For example, people posted fake photographs of radiation warning signs allegedly attached to 5G antennae. Unfounded and dismissed rumors ran wild that the device was causing cancer or mental illness, killing trees and animals, and so forth. The anti-5G movement found willing supporters in the greater movement of citizens who reject all forms of compulsory vaccines, anti-vaxxers, and the movements practically fused in many countries, such as Romania. Small demonstrations have been seen all over the world. Protesters raise banners against the 5G technology and vaccines during an anti-government rally in Sofia, Bulgaria, on May 14th. A May 2019 report in the New York Times reported that RT America, the U.S.-funded, Russian state-sponsored broadcasting network, had released one anti-5G story in 2018. Still, seven in the first 4 months of 2019, including one alleging children were especially vulnerable to cancer and other illnesses allegedly caused by 5G radiation. Hundreds of blogs and websites tend to pick up 5G alarms, RTs. Rarely if the Russian roots are ever found, the Times article argued. Analysts call it a ghastly fog. The International Commission for the Protection of Non-Ionizing Radiation, ICNIRP, conducted a long-running study that concluded that there are no health hazards associated with the types of radio wave radiation used by 5G. With the outbreak of the global COVID-19 pandemic in early 2020, various baseless conspiracy theories tried to relate the virus to 5G technology. Some have suggested that 5G radiation has damaged the immune system and made people susceptible to the disease. Others went further and said 5G signals transmitted the virus. Some, like Moldova's Orthodox Church, argued that the 5G technology and a subsequent coronavirus vaccine were part of a huge conspiracy of mind control. A variety of celebrities have shared the false allegations on their social media accounts, including actor Woody Harrelson, boxer Amir Khan, television personality Amanda Holden, and others. Some have erroneously reported that there are hidden images of a 5G tower and the coronavirus in a new version of Britain's 20-pound note. According to Swedish data from Earhart Market Security Agency, such disinformation, which has been called the coronavirus infodemic, spread like wildfire. Earhart monitored 35 of the most common 5G coronavirus videos that appeared on social media in January and found they were viewed almost 13 million times within weeks. TikTok's successful video sharing application has emerged as a very powerful tool that targets younger audiences, the study found. The false report sparked a global vandalism campaign against 5G antennas, and artifacts were assumed to be linked to 5G networks. In the UK, more than 70 5G masts were damaged or lost. The Department of Homeland Security released an alert in the United States that such conspiracy theories linking 5G and COVID-19 are inciting attacks on communications infrastructure. Violent extremists have benefited from online disinformation campaigns, alleging that wireless infrastructure is detrimental to human health and leads to the spread of COVID-19, culminating in a global initiative by like-minded individuals to share operational advice and justification for attacks on 5G infrastructure, some of which have already triggered explosive and physical attacks on cell towers. In a study in April, Stratcom, the European Council's task force on misinformation within the European Union and its neighborhood, reported that such conspiracy theories had reached fertile soil in the Western Balkans, where misinformation has spread on social media, and portals that the 5G network is triggering the COVID-19 pandemic. Chernobyl disease. The World Health Organization, WHO, and others reacted by vigorously countering the 5G misinformation. As with other fact-checking organizations, the WHO has built a page on its website dedicated to debunking 5G conspiracies. For example, the British fact-checker Full Truth frequently reviews false 5G statements. However, such unfounded conspiracy theories also gain traction in the areas of health and safety due to increasing public distrust on the part of governments. The anti-vaccination measures have manipulated and bred such mistrust. The 5G conspiracy theories seemed to be supported by Nobel Prize-winning Belarusian author Svetlana Alexievich in a recent interview with RFE Aral. The pandemic, she said, is the greatest threat since Chernobyl, referring to the 1986 accident and meltdown at Ukraine's Chernobyl nuclear power plant, then part of the Soviet Union. It remains to be seen if this is flu or whether 5G affects the human immune system. Scientists, in my view, have no definite conviction, she said. While any credible scientific research has proven none of the conspiracy theories regarding 5G and coronavirus, Alexievich's analogy with Chernobyl is valid. This incident has become recognized as an example of government indifference to public health, as the Soviet government has for weeks obscured the scale of the tragedy and exposed its people to grievous, immediate, and long-term health risks. It is an example often cited by 5G conspiracy theorists, along with others such as the 1950s and 1960s thalidomide case and the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, while arguing that governments cannot be trusted. The maximum fact-checking website has concluded that only asking internet companies to remove this material is not an appropriate solution in a free society, is unlikely to succeed, and could even make things worse. People are understandably frightened, anxious, and confused, and in any response, we must take that into account, the website concluded. Not everybody will be convinced. Some people may like conspiracy theories and may not be persuaded by the truth. But because the doubts surrounding 5G have reached the mainstream, it is up to all of us to address these claims head-on with straightforward, high-quality evidence to reassure those who have questions and concerns, rather than simply dismiss them as stupid. COVID-19 is a severe, infectious disease caused by a newly discovered coronavirus that originated in late 2019 in Wuhan, China. The virus is transmitted mainly by saliva droplets or a scattered nasal discharge when an infected person coughs or sneezes. According to the Coronavirus Information Center at Johns Hopkins University, as of May 31st, there were more than 6 million recorded coronavirus infections worldwide and more than 365,000 fatalities. The 5G conspiracy. 5G is the latest generation of cellular network infrastructure to be phased out gradually around the United States and the world. It offers higher data rates and network bandwidth than current 4G LTE technology, which is expected to allow for new technologies such as smart cities and robotic technology. To understand why a small number of people freak out about it, it's time for a little jargon. At its heart, 5G is a collection of technical standards that a subset of wireless radio frequency spectrum devices use to connect with the mobile network. It's the same way that 3G and 4G operated, with 5G devices being able to reach a broader spectrum of radio frequency waves than ever before, allowing for speed and bandwidth improvements. There are three different types of 5G networks. Networks that use the radio frequency spectrum low band, mid band, and high band. Low band networks offer extensive coverage, but only minor performance increases. Mid band networks balance capacity and coverage, and high band networks offer super fast speeds, but signals are not going very far. Low and mid-band networks are ultimately expected to reach a significant part of the world. High-band networks would often be established in cities because they need several small cell sites to be located in a given region to make up for the fact that signals fail to fly. Debunking the 5G conspiracy. Many conspiracy theories about 5G's risks concentrate on the radio frequencies through which signals fly. Yet analysts point out that 5G networks with low band and mid band run at nearly the same frequencies as existing networks. In terms of penetration, there is nothing different, said Kenneth Foster, professor of bioengineering at the University of Pennsylvania, whose research focuses on the health and safety implications of electromagnetic fields that interfere with human bodies. Thanks to high-band networks, where signals stream over millimeter wave frequencies, big developments from 5G can come in. But millimeter wave frequencies can elicit even less worry, said NYU's Collins, because they can't penetrate structures like walls, trees, or human skin. That's one of the reasons they're not traveling very well. It's a bit ironic that all this concern about 5G persists, because the difference is that 5G will be working at higher frequencies, Collins said. In truth, it won't penetrate as deeply into the body. It doesn't even get through the skin. People are also familiar with millimeter wave frequencies in other systems, including airport safety scanners. If you are aware of these airport scanners, MM wave energy is being used, Collins said. You know it doesn't enter the body, because the outside surface of the body is what you see in the picture on the screen. Is there anything of which to worry? The short reply is no. Like FM radio waves and visible light, radio frequency waves are a type of non-ionizing radiation, meaning they don't have enough energy to destroy the DNA within cells and cause cancer, unlike X-rays, for example. Decades of studies indicate that the only way wireless technology can communicate with the body is by heating the skin, but power levels are so low, there's no problem, experts say. What is it that governments do? Like government agencies elsewhere, the U.S. Federal Communications Commission controls the exposure levels of radio frequencies from cellular devices such as mobile phones. Exposure levels from 5G radio frequencies fall far below the agency's limits. The weight of scientific evidence has not effectively associated exposure from mobile devices to radio frequency energy with any established health conditions, the FCC states on its website. YouTube seeks to restrict the spread of bogus 5G coronavirus stories after targeting cell phone towers. Currently, Some critics contend that there have been very few studies on the possible consequences of 5G. In response, most government agencies have emphasized that they will continue to track 5G research as network technology grows. We need to see first how this new technology can be implemented and how the scientific evidence can develop, said Vytenis Andriukaitis, head of the cabinet of the European Commission. In a 2017 response to critics who asked the Commission to place the 5G rollout on hold over concerns about potential health effects. Be assured that to safeguard the welfare of European citizens at the highest possible stage, the Commission will keep abreast of potential developments, he said. Foster said,